You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, a bipartisan group of House lawmakers have publicly endorsed President Biden's $579 billion infrastructure deal with a group of Republican and Democratic senators, giving the compromise fresh momentum at the start of a crucial month for the administration's agenda. A lot is on the line here, Tim.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, let's get right to it with Rodney Slater, partner at Squire Patton Boggs, also former transportation secretary. He joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Secretary Slater, thanks so much for joining us today. Does this infrastructure bill, $560 billion, does it go far enough?
Well, clearly, President Biden had a much larger bill. And I think ultimately, even this measure will be beyond that amount, because I think when you consider current spending levels with new spending levels, it's going to be in excess of $1 trillion. We've got significant transportation needs. I think this is a very, very important step. And I think just as is the case with all transportation measures, you have to have bills that are continuously reauthorized. And it's just unfortunate that in the last, you know, decade or so, we just have not been as forthright in spending the kinds of dollars we have to spend to ensure that our system remains in good shape and that we're also investing in things of the future like electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles, high-speed trains, maglev trains, those sorts of things. So I'm excited about the bill. Traditional infrastructure primarily, though, with some significant investment in broadband. I think it's a very important first step.
Well, Secretary Slater, and that's something I wanted to get into about, you know, there's different types of infrastructure out there. You were transportation secretary under President Bill Clinton. Before that, you were administrator of the Federal Highway Administration. I mean, you have seen our infrastructure for many years, the comings and goings. Are we thinking about infrastructure in a bit of an outmoded way, an old model? Should we be thinking about ways to actually cut back on the use of roads and highways rather than just building it back? And I'm thinking about things like efficient congestion pricing for cars and trucks, mm-hmm. or efficient pavement and bridge wear pricing for trucks, because trucks really kill our roads and highways. You know, should we have them be paying more? That will hopefully ultimately bring about better design, if you will, when it comes to trucks.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to step in support of, say, trucks and trains, because that's really what keeps our economy moving. We are the most mobile society in the world, and we move significant amounts of freight and all the kinds of products that we take for granted when we go to a grocery store, when we go to a department store, that sort of thing. And many of those goods are moved by trucks, many moved by trains. And even during the pandemic, these workers were on the front lines, again, keeping our economy going. But you're right. Transportation, I've always said, is about more than concrete, asphalt, and steel. We have to look at new means of investing in transportation. We have to, frankly, wean ourselves from a dependence on fossil fuels and look at new, renewed energy sources. I think the president has challenged us in that regard, even with his campaign theme of building back better, not just building back, but building back better, and shoring up our infrastructure so as to withstand some of the natural disasters that we're facing, especially on the coast. So we've got a lot of work to do. I think we've got the professionals to get that work done.
Right.
The American people want it done, and it's key to our pursuit of happiness. So I think that there is much about the new that has to be done, but also we have to maintain the system that we have currently.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the coast, too, and I do wonder about that with climate change. We talk about Florida a lot here on Bloomberg. It's caught the attention of investors. You know, should we continue to build back and shore up if we're not going to really equally do something about climate change? Because it's just a case of rebuilding the castle only to see the shoreline take it down again.
Yeah. Well, you know, the president has been very clear about that. And I think he's really hit on three words that I believe will ultimately define the effort that he's proposed and the effort that the Congress will actually pass. He's talked about resilience. He's talked about sustainability and equity. And all of those issues go to the transportation system of the future, being more resilient, where it's shored up, where it's building back better, being sustainable, meaning a system that can withstand the challenges of freight, withstand the challenges of natural disasters, those sorts of things, and then more equitable, ensuring that everyone is included, that no one is left behind. And so I'm excited about what we can anticipate. I think that we've seen the system really tested in this 4th of July holiday weekend, where we've enjoyed the opportunity as Americans to see America come back, if you will, and sort of get back to a period of normalcy, especially hopefully as we've sort of put COVID in our rearview mirror. But again, that has been the number one objective of the president, freeing us from that and then dealing with our economic pandemic, our economic challenges, and then investing in the future. And I just feel good about where we are, but we've got much more to do as the Congress returns from the holiday and sort of nears the August recess and then, frankly, the end of the fiscal year, the end of September. So a lot to do, but I think we're on the right track, to be sure.
I want to talk about this in the context of China, in the context of economic growth here in the United States. Yesterday's big take, the big story that Bloomberg publishes each day, focused on China overtaking potentially the United States as the world's largest economy by 2031. In order for that to happen, a lot has to go right in China, but a lot has to go wrong here in the U.S. Joe Biden has to be unable to push through proposals for renewing infrastructure and expanding the workforce. That's according to forecasts from Bloomberg Economics. You've been in Washington a long time. China, in many cases, when it comes to infrastructure, is just eating our lunch. How do you get Republicans and Democrats to see eye to eye when it comes to making real progress on infrastructure?
Well, first of all, I think here again, we've seen some good signs. I mean, clearly, this effort is not only an effort that's being pushed by the president, but you've got a bipartisan group of senators who've responded quite admirably as well. And then more recently, the House Problem Solvers Caucus has stepped forward. That's roughly sixty members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats. So I think that's a good sign. I can tell you, in years past, those of us who've had the honor of serving as Secretary of Transportation, we've enjoyed significant bipartisan support. I was just with Sam Skinner, a secretary during the Bush administration, Bush 1, Bush 41, I'll say it that way, and gave us a wonderful piece of legislation that was bipartisan. We came in shortly after that, took advantage of that gift, during reauthorization, added additional resources And really, it's that piece of legislation that's governed transportation policy for about 30 years. We now have a need to build on that and to go beyond that. And that's why this current opportunity is so critical. I think it's also significant that you mentioned China. I can tell you that President Biden has been clear in all of his interactions with President Xi Jinping. He said, look, we want you to know that we're back. We're going to meet you at the center of the arena of competition. We intend to win. The president has said that those who see the West declining and the East in the ascendance, we want to tell you that the West is back. And that's what his whole trip to Europe was all about, strengthening our allies, bringing them along as well. And then his entertainment of the Japanese president earlier in the year. I mean, he's been on the case from day one in promoting not only U.S. interests, but the interests of democracies around the world. And infrastructure is important for those democracies to remain vital, because it's about the movement of people and ideas and the strengthening of our relations with others. And so I think the president is clear about this. I think Vice President Harris is also clear about this. And
but
when it comes to the challenge at hand, I'll just close with this, that President Clinton once said, that, look, there is nothing so bad about America that it can't be cured by what's good about America. So I'm confident about the future for the country as well.
Secretary Slater, only got about 50 seconds left here. I think it's very clear about what President Biden wants to do and VP Harris wants to do and the administration wants to do. But Democrats and Republicans can kind of forget that, you know, it's not about them competing against one another, but it's about the United States competing against the world. And most notably, China, as it moves ahead in terms of building its infrastructure. Can they be aligned to actually move forward on infrastructure in a good and aggressive way? And forgive me, but only got about 30, 35 seconds.
No, thanks, Carol. I believe they can. And again, I appreciate both you and Tim in setting up this last discussion, this last segment around that question. It's not about us trying to just fight among ourselves, but it's about us coming forward shoulder to shoulder, pushing ahead so as to ensure that America's best days are ahead. And so I think with the challenge that the president has put forth, the Congress has to respond, and I believe they will.
Well, so great to get some time with you. I hope we can draw on you in the future to really pick your brain about all of this, especially as it moves forward. Rodney Slater, thank you so much. Partner Squire Patton Boggs, of course, former Transportation Secretary under President Bill Clinton, joining us on the phone from the nation's capital.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
So at least a dozen startups are trying to disrupt the $465 billion prescription and pharmacy industry. It's a story reported for Bloomberg Business Week. And so let's get to it. Bloomberg Business Week editor Joel Weber, he is on the Access line in Brooklyn, along with Bloomberg News reporter Angelica Levito on the phone in Massachusetts. Joel, it's big money.
Big money, and I have to admit that a lot of these online pharmacies, these names were new to me. I just straight up did not know that there had been this many entrants into a space that, I don't know, it felt like maybe there was an opportunity, but clearly there was a bigger opportunity than what little old me thought. Angelica, let's bring you in. What has been the strategy here? Because obviously people have been able to get, you know, prescriptions mailed to them at their home addresses for years now. So what's the opportunity for what all these online pharmacies are now seeing?
All of these pharmacies are looking at that $465 billion, and they see an opportunity that they could take even a percent, a little bit of that piece of the pie, and that could be a lot of money for them. And so we're seeing a lot of companies in this space, at least a dozen. And the names in this story that we focused on are Medly, Alto, and Capsule, because these are three that we felt were good representations of companies that are going after that pharmacy that you think of, maybe a CVS or a Walgreens, and they want to be the place where you go to fill your prescription. And, of course, the place where you go is your phone. And so what you do is you order on your phone, and they ship it to you, or they have someone literally deliver it to you, like you would get food from Uber Eats or Grubhub or wherever you order your food.
But Angelica, this is also something that neighborhood pharmacies have been offering for years. I mean, you can call in my Brooklyn neighborhood, the local CVS. The doctor sends your prescription in, and I can get it delivered to my apartment. So what's different about these venture-backed startups?
Exactly. And that's the issue that they're going to have to try to overcome, is that there are plenty of ways to get a prescription delivered to you. And so some of them are trying to focus on specific drugs. So, for example, Alto and Medley are both really focused on specialty drugs. And these are typically expensive medicines that you take for chronic illnesses, maybe rheumatoid arthritis or something that you have to inject or keep refrigerated. They're really delicate drugs that require you to spend a lot of time thinking about and maybe with questions. And so therefore, you can go on your app and chat with a person in real time, or maybe you need help paying for that drug because it's really expensive. And so the pitch there is that you can talk to someone and they can help you, again, via the app.
Angelica, one of the things I love about your story is Amazon. And I think, okay, so what's their role in all of this and maybe disrupting this industry that's been so entrenched in a certain way of doing it? But I also then think Alto, Capsule, Medley, you better watch out, because maybe Amazon's just going to gobble you up in its pursuit to be into healthcare in a big way. What's the role of Amazon in all of this?
So Amazon, three years ago now, they bought a company called PillPack that was once one of these, what we would call digital pharmacy startups. And now, 3 years later, you're starting to really see them innovate. They've expanded, and now they have what they call Amazon Pharmacy. And the idea is that it should be as easy to get a prescription drug as it is to buy a pair of socks or something else on Amazon. And so one of the newest things they've rolled out this year is $6 for a six-month prescription of drugs. And it's some generic drugs. It doesn't cover every single prescription under the sun. But this is, of course, really interesting, and it will pressure everyone to think about the cost, because what is one of the biggest pain points for consumers? It's how much prescription drugs cost. And so that is something that a number of the people we spoke to for this story say, again, you better watch out if you are a startup trying to compete against a company like Amazon.
So there's so much money sloshing around here, and obviously the digital pharmacies are trying to get a cut of it, but like, what are some of the VC money? Who are the players that are sort of helping fuel this interest?
We're seeing a lot of technology investors actually getting interested in this space, or even consumer investors. So Larry Chang, he's a managing partner at Volition Capital, and they were early investors in Chewy, which of course is the startup that tried to disrupt the pet industry, and they were pretty successful in that pursuit. And in talking to Larry, he told me that one of the things that is so fascinating to them and so intriguing about the pharmacy market is just how enormous it is, and that it really represents, in his view, the last segment of retail that has not been disrupted by technology in some way. And so that's why you're starting to see a lot of these, maybe not traditional healthcare investors, but technology consumer investors getting really intrigued by this space.
What about when it comes to data? Because I was intrigued by a part of your story that said that Medley is exploring the sale of anonymous consumer data to drug manufacturers, which would show whether medications are helping patients, how regularly people take them, side effects, and insurance-related information. Is that something that could kind of be a red flag to consumers, their own, even though it's anonymized? Or is this the type of thing where, okay, we're so used to just being sort of anonymous data packets for other firms?
Well, data, of course, is a bigger piece of healthcare, and that's really a lot of the opportunity for some of these companies, because they feel like they know what's going on. They see if you're actually filling your prescription on time. They know if you're reaching out to them asking for help getting that drug covered, and theoretically, if they start asking you how you're feeling, are you experiencing any side effects, they can then bring that to the drug manufacturers, who are all looking for real-world evidence to improve their own strategies. So that is a big opportunity, according to Medley. And I did ask that question about, well, are you worried? Are you going to ask consumers? And they say that they would ask for consent, and it would be anonymized in aggregate data. So it wouldn't be, you know, you're getting information on this one patient and exactly how they performed. It would be, here are all of the patients on this drug who consented to the data collection, and here's how they're doing and what why that matters for you.
We do need some innovation, though, with this space, to say the least. It's great to read about this and hear about some of those companies, as Joel mentioned. I wasn't familiar with them either, Alto, Capsule, and Medley. Angelica, thank you. Angelica Levito, she's healthcare reporter at Bloomberg News, joining us on the phone from Massachusetts. Joel Weber, of course, editor of Bloomberg Business Week on the Access Line in Brooklyn.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
So the Bloomberg Big Take, that was among our most read on the Bloomberg. So is this story. It's about one of, if not the most watched firm on Wall Street and what its head of the company's massive Wall Street operations, Tim, has to say about the trading outlook. And we're talking about JP Morgan.
Yeah. Hannah Levitt is finance reporter for Bloomberg News, joins us on the phone from New York City. Among her most recent stories, JP Morgan bosses predict banks' long trading slump gone for good. Take us into it, Hannah. Give us some context, some background here. Talk about the trading slump that we've seen lately.
Hey, yeah. So thanks for having me on. So after the financial crisis, the wallet, so that the total, you know, trading revenue for the industry, fell consistently. And the reasons for that were, there were a lot of reasons, but there were more stringent rules, there were the rise of electronic trading, low rates, pressure from new entrants, and outright disappearance of some of the products post-crisis. So here we had a downward trend for years, and then that all stopped in 2020 because it was a banner year for these firms and their trading desks. So what the leaders at JP Morgan are saying is trading is a growing business, but, you know, set aside 2020's results, because those were a one-off, as one of them described it to me, in terms of being so high. However, the kind of dip is over. The worst of the worst is over in terms of that dip. So you'll see growth in the coming years. Basically, the market structure changes and all of that are in place, and now trading will grow with the economy.
So how are we supposed to read this? And it's one firm, but it's JP Morgan, Hannah.
Right, exactly. So they pull in, you know, of the five biggest investment banks, they pulled in the most revenue for trading last year. So it's one firm. It's the biggest one in this area. And, you know, I mean, I think that we're especially heading into earnings next week, where the comparisons are projected to be, you know, not great from last year, right? Jamie Dimon already said he signaled a potential 38% decline from a year earlier in trading, and executives at Morgan Stanley and Citigroup also, you know, tempered expectations there. So it's just an interesting dynamic to remember both next week and in the quarters and years ahead.
So what do those years ahead look like, and what do those quarters ahead look like? Because 2020, I think, for a lot of things, could be considered an anomaly.
Right, exactly. And in 2020, the trading desks really carried the team for these banks. And so it remains to be seen, you know, what these comparisons look like. We'll see next week for second quarter, and, of course, in third and fourth quarter and so on. We'll see then. But to the extent that these firms are projecting economic growth, with which Jamie Dimon wrote in his annual shareholder letter this year that he is expecting a period of growth, the idea is that trading grows along with the economy.
And I love how you drill down, or JP Morgan did, whether it's, you know, and share with us and our audience on YouTube and on Bloomberg Radio about U.S. specifically, equity versus fixed income, China in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely interesting. So what I reported was that equities will expand the industry's wallet more than fixed income products. And among the other predictions were the U.S. will be the biggest increase. The trend is also positive in Europe, and the wallet from China will also swell. But it's unclear at this point what share of the additional business will go to foreign firms, but they will see some at least.
What are the risks that the trading desks need to be worried about?
I mean, I think you can look back at the, you know, the kinds of changes that happened over the past 10 years and just think about that and really the impact, you know, and there's always the computers are taking over the world and trading desks and all of that. So there are changes that we can't predict now that will likely happen or will certainly, you know.
You also write about persistently low interest rates being a challenge over in the last slump. And I'm wondering about persistently low interest rates moving forward now.
Yeah, well, and that's a good question. And that's something that we'll see in the coming quarters as well. And, you know, to the extent that that changes over the next couple of years.
How worried are firms like JP Morgan and some of the other big banks, Hannah, on Wall Street when it comes to the startups? I mean, they all had to be kind of in awe of the retail investor, the Reddit trader, and whether or not, we don't know what kind of legs it ultimately has, but it really does upend some of the way we trade.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I wrote in my story was that these leaders at JP Morgan were saying that companies like JP Morgan with the most scale and the ability to invest will have an advantage here. However, it also, going back to the Diamond shareholder letter and, you know, other executives across Wall Street and across financial services more broadly have really sounded the alarm bell here on fintech and even big tech getting into financial services more and the need to step up competition.
All right. Like we said, when it comes to JP Morgan, anything they say or do, we definitely take note of, and so do Bloomberg Terminal readers.
And we got earnings.
And we got earnings coming up, right? And JP Morgan, really, yep. One of the big ones. Hey, Hannah, thanks so much. Hannah Levitt, she's finance reporter at Bloomberg News, on the phone from New York City.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
So just about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. We've got stocks hitting an all-time high today, 10-year yields falling to a more than four-month low. So stocks and bonds moving in unison, kind of. We did have some volatility in terms of the equity trade. Let's get to it with John Treanor, Chief Investment Officer at People's United Advisors. They've got $10 billion in assets under management, and John is on the phone in Bridgeport, Connecticut. John, good to have you here. How are you?
Very good, and thanks for having me on such a such a wonderful day. It's great to see all the green.
Well, but it was kind of all over the place a little bit. We've seen some ups and downs here, but definitely different than what we saw yesterday. What is driving the trade fundamentally in your view right now?
You know, the best thing that I'm seeing in the market today is that it's being led by the materials and the industrials. That, you know, those are the stocks that are the reflation trade stocks. So even though we're seeing bond yields lower, the stocks that we certainly want to see move higher are moving higher. So the composition of this rally is very good. The, you know, the absolute number is great, but the composition of today's rally is very encouraging.
Okay, so give us the details there. I mean, what specifically is encouraging you about it?
Well, what we've seen in the past is that when the technology stocks do well, we're going back and forth between the growth trade and the reflation trade. And we definitely want to see the reflation trade win, all right, you know, to oversimplify it. So the fact that we're seeing the reflation stocks trade well, that tells us that the Fed is really hitting the right tone. They're concerned about inflation, but they're not going to do anything that's going to choke this off. So we're seeing, you know, the market do well, but we're seeing the stocks that really need a strong economy do well, which is very encouraging.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading a note, Peter Buchvar over at Bleakley Advisory sending a note out earlier, and he said this is something we've seen, you know, since Alan Greenspan aggressively hiked rates back in 94, blew up the finances of Mexico and Orange County. Again, Peter Buchvar writing this. Removing policy accommodation at a glacial pace has become institutionalized. He said booms and busts, of course, followed, but aggressiveness in easing and a snail's pace in tightening has become the norm, and this tightening phase will be no different. Do you agree?
You know, we do, and you know, we've all seen the op-eds and the newspapers saying that the Fed is on dangerous ground, and they're, you know, they're going to undo all the great work done by the Fed. I really have to give Chairman Powell great credit. You know, he's unwinding this incredible amount of stimulus in a very, very tactical, a very, very thoughtful way, and the market is responding well. So I hats off to Chairman Powell.
Hats off. Hey, John, I'm wondering about the message that you think the bond market is sending. You heard Carol talk about the yield on the 10-year Treasury hitting the lowest in 4 months. What is that telling you about how investors are thinking about growth?
You know, it's interesting because it's confusing the heck out of my fixed income team. I mean, if
right?
You think back, on June 16th, all right, the day of the Fed meeting, the 10-year was at a 157. Today we're at a 131. I mean, it really is basically the bond market essentially saying they believe that inflation is transitory. It's almost too good to be true. So we're actually a little defensive. We're making sure we stay defensive on the bond side because it's almost a Goldilocks scenario in the bond market right now, and we think it's probably a little bit overbought. So I mean, this it's a tremendous move. There's been a great rally, but we think it's overdone on the bond market.
When you say you're being defensive in the bond trade, what does that look like for you?
Well, we're keeping our duration short. We're probably about 80% of the duration, meaning we're shorter in our maturities on our bond portfolio. 80% duration of the ag right now. We're going to stay there. We're going to stay there.
What's the bond market telling us? Are they telling us, okay, folks, yep, you're going to get some off-the-charts earnings numbers for the second quarter? We know that because a year ago, comparisons were easy and everything was falling apart and stopping. And yet, if we start to scrape away things on the other side of this, growth isn't going to be as strong as everybody thought.
Exactly. What the bond market is telling you is it's almost Goldilocks that we're going to get the great earnings, which we do think we're going to get, but we're not going to get growth so strong that we're going to see rates move up and we're going to choke off this rally. The bond market is really telling us that we have hit it just perfectly.
All right, so let's talk about names that you like because it plays into, I think, your reflation trade. Among them is something like a Whirlpool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you take a look at the stocks that we're adding to our portfolios, they have one theme. That what we're looking for are those companies that are going to benefit from the economic growth. So we're looking at Whirlpool. If you look at a chart on that stock for the last 5 years, it really hasn't done anything. It certainly bounced off the lows of last year, but we think Whirlpool, with what we're seeing in housing, which we think is sustainable, this is a company that we want to own because it's just playing on a lot of those reflation themes that we think are going to roll into next year.
All right, what about Microsoft?
You know, Microsoft is our, it's the one of the, sort of the big five tech stocks. It's the one that we really think has got the best business model going forward, from whether it's the cloud, whether it's, all the different areas. I know they had a little setback with the Pentagon the other day, but we think Microsoft is very, very well positioned. If you own tech, you really want to make sure you own Microsoft.
Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about that, the Pentagon essentially pulling the JEDI contract yesterday. That happened at about noon Eastern time. And we still didn't see Microsoft even close lower. It closed flat yesterday. So it didn't seem to come as a huge surprise to investors. What was your reaction to that? Does that concern you at all, that the cloud just isn't there for the company?
Well, if you read the articles, half of the articles are really very, very politically oriented. I don't know whether the awarding of that contract to Microsoft had to do with the Trump administration's problems with Amazon and
Washington Post.
But they're getting half the contract.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've, and maybe this is the government hedging its best, or as government contractors like to do, it's like playing them against them for the best deal.
Yeah. As a taxpayer, I think it's good. And again, this has been so long in the tooth. And things have changed, and it does make sense for the Pentagon to look at the contract again and say, hold on a second, let's redo this. We think Microsoft has got a great product, but again, I think the political influence here messed up the process, so I think a redo is called for.
JP Morgan, you also like. What's up with that?
We like the banks. We look at the banks almost as call options on the economy. Hmm. And if the economy is doing well, you're going to see credit losses continue to remain low. You're going to hopefully see loan demand pick up at some point. So we like JP Morgan. It's well managed. But we like the financials just because we like the economy.
Even though with rates so low that in terms of the amount of money that they might make on some of the loans, it's not so great.
The net interest margin on all the banks is incredibly low, but, we're hoping we see rates slowly move up as the economy improves. But, again, we think J.P. Morgan and the bigger banks can really do well. They've got such diversified revenue streams that we think they can do well here.
Just 5 seconds. What are you looking for when the big banks report earnings starting next week?
Well, you got 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
We're hoping for, we know credit costs are going to be good. What we're looking for is something that gives us positive news about loan demand. Loan demand is going to be the key. That's what we're looking for.
All right, going to leave it there. Always cover a lot of ground. John, thank you. John Treanor, Executive VP, Chief Investment Officer over at People's United Advisors, $10 billion in assets under management, on the phone from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.